From WHYY, welcome to your Friday edition of Hittin' Season, a Philadelphia Phillies podcast. I'm Justin Clue. I write for Baseball Prospectus, and I'm the author of Summer of the Cheap Wieners, what the 1941 Phillies were up to while Joe DiMaggio was making history. Available now. With me is Liz Rocher, the editor of Sabres Baseball Research Journal. Hello, Liz.
Hello, Justin.
You know,
how are you after such a week of baseball?
Hey, how about it? Watching the game as we are recording during game four of the Phillies and Nationals. And Bryce Harper fails to tag up on a Luis Arraez fly ball because he misread it. So he's not on third base. He's on second base instead of third base, and he should be on third. And this triggers a Larry Anderson rant about the Phillies' fundamentals.
Course.
He rants a lot, but he's right about the Phillies and fundamentals. Understand something. They might get a boost from this total rearrangement of the defensive scheme. They're certainly getting a boost from Luis Arraez, but no matter how this team was going to improve at the deadline, there's going to keep being something wrong with them. We kind of in general accepted
yes.
that. If you don't remember, there's going to continue to be problems because they were not all addressed. And also, as we're also going to talk about, sometimes you just run into bad luck after making a decision like that. They are going to be hopefully winning more in the near future, but also losing games due to misfiring or just poor fundamentals, like Harper not tagging up on that fly ball, because those are the mistakes that might seem small, but they always come through. Like, it always looks bad. And yeah, Harper eventually came in to score because Brandon Marsh hit a double. The Phillies are doubling like crazy tonight. Hitters 2 through 7 all have doubles tonight.
It's wild.
It's insane. They're doubling over. But just not to, harp on a negative aspect, but it's just kind of like we all knew the team wasn't going to be perfect. They didn't even get all of the kinds of players they needed to get, let alone the specific players. And, we knew this was going to be still a challenge moving forward. And one of the challenges would be this team has poor fundamentals. So just something to keep in mind that was not all magically corrected at the trade deadline, even with the cool new things about the Phillies that we're going to talk about.
And Larry's been around the Phillies enough to know that there's no single thing they could do. There's no way, even if they'd done everything, there'd still be something wrong with them. They are the Phillies. You've been here long enough to know. There's nothing ever works completely correctly. They always need an element of luck. So, boil down, Larry, come on. It's a long season, man. It's August.
While you were talking, the Phillies hit another double, so now hitters 2 through 8 have hit doubles tonight as Bryson Stott also joins the party, and they've also scored another run. But like I was saying, in a more positive way, the Luis Arraez era has begun in Philadelphia, Liz. And I remember a certain tall podcaster saying that, there's some perfectly valid things that you could or perhaps even should be mad about in regards to what the Phillies did at the trade deadline, what they decided to do, how it came to the point to decide that was what they were going to do, all of that. Totally valid. I even agree with most of it. However, there was going to be a positive impact from Luis Arraez joining the team. And like I said, if they could come back and win that game one, the last game with the defensive scheme that they started the season with and before Luis Arraez got there, they could get people on board again. And then Arraez gets there and he provides the boost he's going to provide because it was unquestionably going to be a boost. And, people kind of were buying back in after a low couple of days with the Don Mattingly stuff and the Harper stuff and the trade deadline stuff, the debates, and then the arguments over what they actually did and if it was the right thing. So, I feel like it was worth pointing out that the payoff with Luis Arraez totally arrived in exactly the way I said it would.
yes, it did. I will not rob you of credit for that, nor will anyone now that you have said it on the podcast. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it just works out that way. Sometimes you get to be right. And it's nice when it happens. I'm not as familiar with that, but maybe someday. Yeah.
Maybe if you're fortunate. Yeah, I gotta tell you, what a feeling. Ha ha. The Luis Arraez era begins, Liz. And I do want to just give you the chance to kind of gush over that because the word you're going to hear a lot tonight is impact. His impact has been immediate and as promised, I would say.
Oh, completely. And, like, I want to, one thing that's been floating around in my mind, like, I'm so excited that he's here. He's a super fun player. He's really exciting to watch when he's at the plate or on the bases. But I do want to point out that a lot of people said there's, you know, he's going to be here, but he's not going to change the Phillies in the way they do things. And I think that's right. The guys are not changing the way they hit. But there's a difference between change and influence. And I think Arias being there in the lineup is definitely going to influence guys to tackle things a little bit differently. And I think we could see that tonight with, you know, these 78 doubles that they've hit.
Yeah, like the impact is going to be an overused word, but it really kind of applies in that, like, Luis Arias being or not being in your lineup. There's such a discernible difference between just the lineups, but like the outcomes that those lineups are capable of providing. Because if you have a night where some Phillies are just kind of like trickling on base and they're not making much of it, eventually now you're going to get to a Rises spot in the lineup and those runs come in. And I don't know, you know, anything about probabilities or anything scientific, but I've decided to just think of it as like all of the runs Luis Arias hits in are because Luis Arias, you know, the Phillies wouldn't have those runs if without him being there. Yeah, exactly. Like you could make the argument, oh, well, they would score other ways. You don't know. But I think you can confidently say that every run Luis Arias knocks in is a gift. And he's doing it whether the rest of the lineup is like feeling particularly hot or not. And that to me is like true impact. They can't help but be changed by what he's doing.
Exactly. That type of consistency is irreplaceable, and that's what they've been looking for. And I have to say, I appreciate Dombrowski actually going out and ticking something off the list as it actually was. Like, he didn't get a guy that might, you know, that has the, you know, he fits that sometimes, or, you know, he's got times when he's like that. Luis Arias is that guy, and he is that guy all the time. And that's what the Phillies have been looking for. And I'm grateful that Dombrowski didn't get fancy with it and just went out and got the guy that was going to fit the what they needed the best. I know that sounds like really obvious, but it's not always that simple.
That guy is exactly who they needed after being down 3-0 early in game one against the Nationals, because Aaron Nola was starting, Liz. It was an Aaron Nola start following all of the action at the trade deadline. Was that exactly what you needed after the long day?
I actually just laughed. Like, when I saw who was starting, I actually just cackled at myself. I'm just like, yeah, it's about right. He's not going to be here tonight, but I guess this is what we get to watch. Celebration, everyone!
Yes, the Phillies celebrated their trade with the Giants that brought in both Luis Arias and Caleb Killian, a reliever, by starting Aaron Nola against the Nationals. And they were down 3-0 early. The Phillies did battle back and win this one, as they always should with the Nationals, who have a terrible bullpen. The twist was Nola settled down and actually went 6 innings, and the Phillies had a 4-run seventh and added 2 more in the eighth to win it. So this game had a noticeable hinge point, if you were watching. Nola's early runs came given the typical way, getting homered to what feels like death as people are still finding their seats. And he did give up his league-leading 28th homers, so he is now 4 ahead of Nathan Eovaldi of the Rangers across all of baseball. Joe Ettinger of The Good Fight notes that since the start of July, Aaron Nola has a 4.37 ERA across 6 starts. It's still not necessarily what you would want from someone like Nola, but it's a welcome alternative to the 6.04 ERA he had in his first 17 starts of the year. It's very funny, Liz, that someone is saying Nola has a 4.37 ERA in this sample size, but they're not. It's not like an accusation. He's like, it's a defense of, look how good Aaron Nola is doing. It's not a total disaster. He's using his changeup more with okay-ish results.
Ooh, that's exciting.
Yeah, I mean, does Aaron Nola's kind of like soft success here? I don't know. Do you want me to sit here and ask you how you feel about Aaron Nola?
We're still doing this.
Let's not lower ourselves. I'm going to drive right past it. So anyway, it happened, and he did okay, and that's fine. It's what we all want. It's what we're hoping for. So that's what happened.
That's exactly right. Like, expecting him to give up no runs is just asking to be disappointed. You know, you're just going to be disappointed. So don't expect that. Expect less from him because you know that's all he could give. God.
Man, I love giving advice.
We're going to talk about this till we're dead.
I love giving advice that I myself am not capable of following.
Yeah.
And I won't. So all that being said, Nola had the Phillies in a hole, and for four innings, nothing happened. Everybody hated on Nola and gnashed their teeth at the Phillies' offense. And then the seventh inning arrived. And with one out, Andrew Alvarez hit Brian De La Cruz with a pitch and walked Bryson Stott. He was replaced by Tom Cosgrove, who then walked Edmundo Sosa, which loaded the bases for Derek Hill. Derek Hill, what a pickup. What a pickup. I'm just saying it. This, like we used to say, Placido Polanco, all that guy does is hit. Or so hot right now. You know, it's just part of, like, Derek Hill, what a pickup, part of his name. So they went up 4-3 as Derek Hill grand slammed one of Tom Cosgrove's next few pitches. And boy, boy, oh boy, Liz, Derek Hill. I mean, this, I don't want to say like, well, this was basically their deadline acquisition when they're talking about outfielders. He's just kind of like the horrible monster that is the Phillies outfield at this point. But every time it's Derek Hill news, except for the moment we're going to reference in a minute here, it's typically good news for the Phillies. Like, Derek Hill has just found a way to come through in some ways on levels he hasn't really played while with all these other teams he's been on over the years. Like, he has really found a groove with the Phillies. I guess my question is, why isn't there a fan group called like the Hill People out there in the 300 level at Citizens Bank Park?
Because that would be, I mean, that would be too amazing, don't you think? I feel like that might be too cool. Like, even the Marsh stuff you've been suggesting, there's a reason it hasn't caught on, and it's because it's too cool for. Man, I just looked up Derek Hill, and he is hitting .268 in over, you know, I mean, 76 plate appearances. But, I mean, when you spread that out over a long period of time, it's like Edmundo Sosa used to be. You can plop him in, and if he can, you know that he might be more likely than not to get a hit in this situation. And that's nice to see, a guy who can be a little opportunistic. You know, that used to be Cody Clemens, and now he's doing that for other teams.
Said you don't want to lose Cody, but...
You know, that's really annoying.
I think it's fine. Are you sure?
Yes.
But to your point, I mean, Derek Hill's only hitting .237 since July 1st. So it's not like he has the highest numbers on the team. It is simply that it's these guys, and obviously Derek Hill and Luis Arraez are very different players. But it's these guys who show up and just, they seem to operate differently than the normal Phillies. You know, like, they get here and they're like, okay, well, so like, this is what I do. And it's such a break from the amorphous blob that the Phillies become when they're not playing well, where they're all just, they feed off of each other so much, and really you're only getting like two or three of them really hot at the plate at once. Then, you know, we've all watched them enter that mode, whether it's just like the heads down and they look really sad to be there and nobody can really get it going. And then like somebody like Hill comes in and he's just like, all right, let's go. And there's suddenly just like a different kind of energy that helps pull them out of funks. And Arraez is that on a whole other level with the frequency and reliability of his contributions. But Hill just, you know, you notice that. That's just like these guys, when guys are new like that, they really just, this team in particular seems to really need and respond to a change in the atmosphere.
Yeah, it's like when the pressure drops, when the barometer is falling. You could feel it in the air, and like the Phillies need that to happen in order to make any major change. And it's a weird thing, true, but at least it's a recognizable pattern.
Yeah, we understand them now is something you can, well, rarely say, and we probably shouldn't be saying now about the Phillies. But they did go up 4-3 after Derek Hill's grand slam. And then they came back out in the other, or for the next inning, and for the first out of this shutdown inning, Derek Hill, playing center field, ran from dead center to the left edge of the W.B. Mason sign, which, if you don't have the Phillies outfield memorized and like mapped out in your head, it's pretty far. And then he tumbled and went into a roll, emerging on his feet and jogging backwards, having caught the ball. I mean, good Lord.
I mean, yeah. It was something. It was really something to watch. I've watched that a couple of times since it happened. That's my favorite type of play. The one you think is going to end very, very badly.
Well, you know, every diving, rolling, stumbling catch has that moment where they decide to, like, you know, go for it. And sometimes you can even see it in their eyes. And when it's like a young, brash outfielder, you're like, oh, boy. And, you know, that thing, you know, this is about to go from the coolest moment. Your baseball card shot could be coming from this. Or in 1 second, you're going to be like running like a little kid towards the fence because that's where the ball wound up rolling. So you're really, you know, you're rolling the dice. And Derek Hill, boy, that's the thing. He looked so comfortable making that catch, mm-hmm. which is obviously not an easy catch to make by any stretch. And yeah, whew, you talk about contributions and impact. I mean, you know, it's rare we get to talk about that on defense with the Phillies, but Derek Hill could certainly, you know, make a difference there. And then fortunately, Orion Kerkering got his head on straight and struck out the next two hitters. So that was what a pivot from what that inning felt like it was going to be for like 2-3 seconds. The Phillies looked primed to add to their lead, which doesn't always mean that they will. But it was Bryce Harper in his last night as a first baseman, temporarily, who crashed a two-run homer in the bottom of the eighth after Kyle Schwarber had walked. And the Phillies got a two-run boost out of him. Now, getting a rise was one thing, Liz, speaking of Harper, but clearly the Phillies are in awe, or at least want you to be in awe, of Harper moving to right field. Bryson Stott, when he was asked about it, he was a good company man. He was saying, you know, how much he appreciated Harper's move, and, you know, everybody's moving around, but Harper's move seems to be the one that's really, like, getting people to just talk about him. And Arise expressed gratitude to Harper when he was surrounded at the airport. Don Mattingly told reporters after the game, "The key for me is Harp. Harp moving to the outfield is really the key to this. It kind of solidifies the outfield." I have more, but do you want to stop and talk about that? Do you feel like, I'm sorry, let me rephrase the question. Liz, on a scale of extremely to don't even worry about it, how solidified would you say the Phillies outfield is right now?
What is beyond don't even worry about it? Is it cement foundation? Is it keystone laid in, you know, 1680? What is it? Because that's what they're telling us, and I guess we have no other reason but to believe it. They are definitely telling us. Everyone is telling us.
I mean, everyone's like, I think the general consensus is, yeah, this may not be a great idea, but they weren't going to fix their defense anyway. And this allows them to get better offensively, I guess, is what you're theoretically saying. And, you know, that serves its own purpose. People have generally, I guess, accepted this, even if they don't like it. But to call it solidified, I feel, is, you know, it's an experimental outfield. I don't know if anything feels solid. Things don't feel more solid now that all the players have changed places. You know what I mean?
No. No, things don't feel quite solid. I mean, it's been a little, like, everyone should be grateful to Harper for doing the obvious thing, a.k.a. the thing that he should do, because if they asked him, he needs to do it, 'cause this is his job. Like, everyone's happy that he's doing that, but I'm also wondering, it's been a little bit since he's played the outfield, and he stopped doing it because of a repeated injury.
I believe they told him to like, take it easy with the arm, or easing him back in with the arm.
Well, that's great.
You know how Bryce Harper likes to, like, ease his way into things?
Yeah. I think I said recently, Bryce Harper has never eased his way into anything in his entire life.
Mm-hmm.
He's always run into the wall full speed. Like, so, I don't know. Like, that's what I'm concerned about. Like, he hasn't had any trouble with, you know, was it his shoulder in a while? But, you know, he hasn't had to do a lot of throwing at first base. So, I don't want to say worried, though that's what I am. I'll say curious. I'm curious about how this will work out.
Yeah, I mean, you can see how it does and doesn't work, and that's just going to how it is moving forward. But I mean, I don't expect Harper to be uncomfortable in right field. And he did. No. He went out there, and I did love that he did his little dramatic head bow thing he used to do to get the fans riled up and, like, flipping his hair back and forth and everything. And the fans were, like, waiting for it, too. They were, like, waiting to welcome him back to right field. It was nice. I forgot
that's
this.
That's cute.
Like, that kind of brings this back, this little thing he does with the people in right field. So that's, yeah, that's cool. So, yeah. Harper also said, I've said it in years past. I mean, I know everybody thinks it's crap when I say it, but it's not. I think any chance that gives us an opportunity to win, I'd do anything for this organization, and they know that. And both that quote and the previous one were come courtesy of Paul Casella's story on MLB.com. But, yeah, Liz, what do you think he's referring to when he says, I know everybody thinks it's crap when I say it? Is it because we kept using the word pandering to describe what he was saying? What he was saying to us for a while?
I mean, my memory always goes to, why didn't you ask the Phillies to keep Rhys Hoskins, you cruel man? that's the first thing he ever did that bothered me. And I don't, you know, that might or might not have been something that would have helped them to win. But I don't think it's crap. I don't think anyone thinks it's crap. But it always seems like Harper is not the easiest person to talk to or to give instructions to or to ask to do something that you're not sure he wants to do. You know, he just gives off that aura of, I like it when things happen the way I want them to. I mean, everyone's like that, but he is a professional ball player who makes millions upon millions of dollars a year. You get the sense he doesn't hear no a lot.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I think he's, I've never thought he was disingenuous when he was talking about doing anything for this team to win. I also think there's probably a pretty tight limit on exactly what this team would ask him to do to win, like outside of the normal thing, like, hey, be one of the best players in baseball, please. Like, outside of that, I don't think they're going like, and also, you have to build John Middleton a house on that hill. It is unstable. Like, I don't think they're challenging him like that. Why would you? The whole point is that he's supposed to be here and comfortable and extremely good. But I don't know. I think it's funny to hear him like address his critics like that, because this is just an ongoing thing for him this year. It feels like he's feeling the heat on occasion. But regardless, like I said, nice little moment before the game as he returned to right field in game two because Luis Arraez had arrived. And I believe even the thing about him, like he joined up with the Giants in free agency because they said, we will let you play second base. And that was a really big deal to him. But I believe it was said that Dave Dombrowski was like, that didn't really come up in any of our stuff. And like, he certainly didn't make an ultimatum to the team or anything. But they did rework the defense to allow for Luis Arraez to be at second base. And quite frankly, everything he was said to be from the instant he arrived in the Phillies lineup. A hitter, an energy bringer, an instant impact maker. If the other guys are getting on base even accidentally, like I said, Arraez getting a spot in this lineup means they're going to come in a lot of the time. And he started, like I said, each run from him feels like a gift. And he started giving immediately.
Oh, yeah.
And let's not miss that Jesús Luzardo pitching 8 shutout innings is a pretty nice gift as well. But Woo! Trey Turner, Bryson Stott, and Justin Crawford all had multi-hit games in this one in Game 2 against the Nationals. But the big story was, of course, Arraez, who got the applause and moments later got the hit. And in his first Phillies at-bat, Arraez smacked an RBI single, like I said, as advertised. Followed immediately by Alec, I'm not an automatic out, Bohm, grounding into a double play. Now, granted, Bohm was right this time. Because this time he was 2 outs, not just 1. But Alec Bohm, hitting .227. 6.45 OPS, not automatic out. And Arraez's next at bat, he had a double sneak past first base into right field to score another run. And the Phillies followed suit with a sac fly from Alec Bohm and an RBI double from the maligned Brandon Marsh. Remember that name? It was very popular around the All-Star game. Trey Turner knocked in another run in the 7th with a single, and the Phillies sealed this one up 5-0 thanks to a scoreless frame from new reliever acquired alongside Arraez, Caleb Killian. Unlike Arraez, Killian's success would not continue throughout the series. But Liz, I mean, we got your first impressions here on Arraez, but just seeing him in action was, I mean, everybody's been reading about nothing but Luis Arraez for the past few days. As you started to see the national kind of response come in the baseball media, there's been a lot of very positive outlooks for the Phillies because of them making this deal. Now, granted, that depends on how much you value the opinion of many of the national baseball media, but still, that's been the narrative they've been running with. The Phillies, you know, less so than the Dodgers, but more so than a lot of other people, effectively changed their team in a positive way, or at least in more positive than negative ways. And I mean, it's still jarring to just be seeing Luis Arraez play for other teams and hearing about this slow swing he has that's purposeful so that he has more time to hit the ball and make decisions about hitting the ball. And the way that he just does, he just line drives or hard ground balls. And it's like an endless barrage of singles with some doubles thrown in. And then he's suddenly wearing a Phillies uniform, and you're like, yeah, but now, like, is he still going to do that stuff? And of course he is. He gets here, and with runners in scoring position, he's already solidly hitting the ball, like, on the screws to the outfield. It's awesome. Like, it's awesome to see those runs come in. Like, there's a reason we all took issue with Alec Bohm's "I'm not an automatic out" comment, because he was the one hitting cleanup, and he shouldn't have been. He shouldn't have been put in that position. And this isn't like the right-handed outfield bat of legend. It's a left-handed infielder, but still, just an immediate impact. The immediacy, I think, is the part that really got to me. I'm very glad to see the heights this offense could rise to now with somebody like Arraez in the lineup, who's knocking in the runs the Phillies were leaving on the field.
I really loved how appreciative the crowd was that he was there. The round of applause, the ovation they gave him as he just came up to bat. Like, he didn't do anything. He just came out to bat, and the crowd went wild. They were like, holy crap, this is super fun. Like, I just loved how into it they were. And it's not that you don't see that from the crowd often, but they don't have a reason to do that often. Like, wow, look at this new guy. He's here. He's very exciting. It's been a few years. So it's nice to be able to do that again. And like, I understand why everyone is so excited about the immediacy, including you, because I am as well, because we're not used to guys doing what they're advertised to do immediately upon arriving.
Trey Turner.
I was just going to say Trey freaking Turner. Like, and that has deeply scarred us. That has deeply scarred us as a fan base. At least those of us who are insanely into it have been scarred by Trey Turner. And we'll continue to be scarred by it because he's going to be here forever. So it's nice to see someone come here and just do what they're supposed to do and not have whatever ghost of whatever founding father suck the talent out of them when they get here.
Yeah, so that was cool to see. And like I said, can't forget Jesus Luzardo and the job he did in that game. I mean, this was something else that, like, I've heard it said more as like a negative lately, but when you talk about the Phillies pitching, it's like, yeah, they have some of the best pitching, obviously rotation you'd be willing to go into a postseason series with. And Luzardo is part of their big three with Zach Wheeler and Christopher Sanchez. And when they pitch, like, the negative portrayal lately has been like, you're putting so much pressure on those guys to pitch really well. And, you know, yeah, I can see that being a cost the Phillies pay here. But right now, while they're all like, you know, doing all right and everybody's healthy and everything, and they're able to pitch at the ceilings that they pitch at, this is what you get, man. And this is what's so valuable to the Phillies, especially now that they have, like, they're more of a run scoring threat collectively with Arraez in the lineup, is that if you have a pitcher who's giving you 6-7 shutout innings or keeping an offense limited to just 3 runs, just a couple of runs, then you can just, you know, hang 5 on them and walk away with a win. Like, that is a formula that works even with everybody playing out of position. So, you know, that is a way to win a ball game, which is essentially what the Phillies were gunning for at the trade deadline. It's like, what what can work? Like, what could work if everything was sort of facing the right direction? So, yeah, wanted to be sure to give Luzardo his flowers. But in game 3, well, it was time for a butt kicking, felt like. Things had gone a little too well for a little too long, you know? Nice series against the Orioles that the Phillies finally won. couple of solid trade deadline and a couple of games against the Nationals. And then, you know, it was time for the Phillies to be brought back to earth. And this one was kind of a butt kicking in disguise, classic tightly maneuvered back and forth until extra innings implosion. Not the most typical formula, but certainly the box score looked like a butt kicking. I don't know if you read a recap on MLB.com, Liz, but they're generally written from the perspective of the winner, or at least that's the version that gets prominently displayed. So this time, given that the Nationals had a 6-run rally in the 11th inning, including a 37-year-old starting pitcher, Miles Mikolas, squeeze bunting for a run in a pinch hit at bat, the Nationals were, of course, the heroes of this write-up. Nats writer Jessica Camerato said, Mikolas is only the third starting pitcher to drive in a run since the universal DH was instituted in 2022, excluding two-way player Shohei Ohtani. Joining the Braves' Victor Mideros on July 17th this season and the D-backs' Ryan Nelson on March 30th, 2025. Fun! Fun information to receive while the unthinkable is happening, Liz.
I do have a note on Miles Mikolas. Today, he earned his officially 10 years of service time. So congratulations to him. That's a big deal.
Yeah, he started after being called into pinch hit last night in that situation and succeeding. Don't forget, he was also making the start today. So that's got to be some kind of record as well. Fortunately, he pitched like Miles Mikolas and the Phillies were able to build a lead. So the story did have a happy ending. But yeah, also in game three, the disaster that was becoming a 10-4 Phillies loss was cued by new reliever Caleb Killian. I'm also here going to mention that Brooks Raley gave up 3 hits and 2 runs in his first inning of work for the Phillies, too, giving up a home run, a double, and a single. But it was Killian who came on for the 11th. He gave up a walk, a triple, got a quick breather after it looked like one of the Phillies had suffered a devastating injury. The Phillies rearranged their defense strategically as the Nationals sent Thursday's starter Miles Mikolas to the plate, who had just gone into the cage and bunted 6 times in preparation for doing this, and he knocked in another run to make it 7-4. Killian walked another batter and struck a guy out before being replaced by Chase Shugart, who gave up a walk and a double and an RBI ground out to make sure the Nationals would win, like I said, 10-4. It can't feel good, Liz, bringing in the guy you know can't get the job done to try and get the job done for the guy who's here to get the first guy's job done, especially when you know Shugart's not going to solve any problems by bringing him into the game.
Chase Shugart isn't going to be the answer to anyone's problems. I see him and it always feels like a loss. Mm-hmm. It's frustrating to see these guys flail pretty early on in their tenure here. That's definitely not what you want. Especially since that extra innings game didn't have to be the butt kicking that it was. It really didn't.
Yes, they were kind of at each other's throats back and forth until it was tied 4-4 going into extras. And nobody really had a big explosion until the Nationals were able to take advantage of what is still a soft underbelly of this team, the bullpen that isn't Joan Duran or Jonathan Bolin. I'll throw Jonathan Bolin in there too.
Yeah.
But yeah, mostly you're looking at guys who are capable of giving up the lead and have many times so far this year. This was one of those occasions, and it was a shame. And yeah, darkly comic to see Caleb Killian being dragged out so they could put Chase Shugart back in there. And you're like, the game is lost. That is a lost ball game. And just to circle back to my explanation behind the structuring of MLB.com game recaps, we're at the time of year when teams that are not considered part of the playoff picture, or big parts of the playoff picture at least, claim they're just having fun. You know, they're just having a good time out there. Mets have a new reliever who jumps up in the air after he strikes people out. It's just fun. They're in last place. Hey. They spend a ton of money, but then they're terrible. But it's fun. We're just having fun. It's a fun time. So these teams in that position start looking for what they're going to call a win this year. Obviously, they've got a lot more losses than wins. But, you know, what are they going to, like, call a win if the season ended today? And this passage from the recap of the Nationals' 10-4 win over the Phillies on Wednesday, their first win in 8 games, really jumped out at me. Emphasizing togetherness all season, the Nationals broke a frustrating losing streak their way, as one.
Oh, God.
Liz, how, as one, did you feel the Nationals beat the Phillies on Wednesday?
I didn't feel they did it as one. I feel like one guy hit a ball and another guy ran across the ran across the base. Like, I don't understand what that means. Was that written by a human or was that written by AI?
Great question. Impossible to know. But yeah, just
that sounds shockingly like AI. Because most good writers wouldn't do that. Most good writers don't do that. They don't use metaphors. That's so stupid. I'm really angry about that. It's so clearly they're doing all their little game recaps by AI.
Just a real 90s movie poster tagline of a line.
Oh my God, yes.
I felt like we had to both experience. Jake Irvin, the Nationals pitcher, said, "We never give up. No matter what, we're going to stay in the fight. No matter what the last week has looked like, what the future looks like, we're going to stay in the moment and take care of business when you have to." But I think they did give up, though. Like, the last seven chances you had to not give up, you did give up eventually. But, you know, it's not like the Nationals are sleeping on the field after the lights go off because they lost and they can't leave the field until they win again. But, you know, hey,
that
whatever.
That would be really funny, though.
Hey, let's even this out. We're going pretty hard on the Nationals here. Do you feel in an emotionally solid enough state to hear some Kyle Schwarber slump numbers?
Ooh, sure, let's do that.
Kyle Schwarber's slumping, and it's bad. Thankfully, yeah. Luis Arraez is here, but otherwise, if Kyle Schwarber's slumping, the Phillies' offense is typically not doing well. Over the entire 2026 season, he is hitting .241 with a .522 slugging percentage, a 47.3% fly ball rate, so 47.3% of the batted balls he hits have been fly balls. 29.5% of those fly balls have been home runs, and he has hit 33 home runs. In the month of June, he hit .305. That's very good for Kyle Schwarber. He had a .558 slugging percentage. His fly ball rate dropped down under 40%, and his home run to fly ball rate ratio then climbed up 5 points to almost 35%, and he hit 8 home runs in a single month. Now, I'm just giving you that sample size, those two sample sizes as comparison to this one. Since July 1st until today, he has a .194 batting average, which, you know, yeah, it looks bad, but it also looks like the batting average you typically see next to Kyle Schwarber's name. So I don't know, it wasn't super unnerving to see that. He's slugging .323. That's much worse.
Yeah, that's very bad. That's really bad.
That's over 200 points lower than he hit in June. His fly ball rate is 43.1%. So between the other two rates that I mentioned earlier, under his fly ball rate for the entire season, and his home run to fly ball rate is 13.6%. So 13.6% of the fly balls he hits are going for home runs since July 1st, which, yes, is a very low number of home runs, much lower. That number is typically up at or over 30%. And it's at 13 in this sample size since June 1st. The reason for that is he's only hit 3 home runs. Since July 1st, going into Wednesday's game, Kyle Schwarber and Derek Hill have the same number of home runs.
Oy.
Are you glad that you know that? Are you glad that we went through those numbers?
Oh, I'm so happy. Just giddy with excitement. Thank you for sharing those.
Yeah, you got it.
I certainly don't want to place myself, you know, at the top of a mountain during a freaking thunderstorm. Thank you.
Well, you kind of got to think it's like an angling issue. If he's still hitting fly balls, which he is, but they're not going for home runs. I mean, that might have to do with, yeah, I guess the exit velocity, the angle he's taking in his swing. It might have to do with what stadiums he's been playing in. Maybe they're stadiums that he doesn't typically homer in or that are not welcoming to home run hitters in general. I mean, when you're able to zero in like that, you can kind of see like where the issue is, even though, you know, you and I are not hitting instructors. We're not going to be able to diagnose Kyle Schwarber, nor would he take our information seriously if we brought it to him, and he would be right to do so. But
yes,
you can kind of see that, like, yeah, ball's getting hit. It's just not going over the fence. So a curious case for Kyle Schwarber, and one that we are going to have to just hope figures itself out. He's in the right place. And frankly, we've seen Kyle Schwarber go through things like this before. And, you know, I would be surprised if he finishes the season with less than 40 home runs, even with his current coldness. Do you feel like this is something?
I think this happened last year, too. He went cold for a while and then came back and hit him at a rate that still had him in the race, you know, to have the most home runs in Major League Baseball. So, like, I'm not concerned. He goes through this. We've seen it. Just feels terrible when we're all in the middle of it, because it feels like it's never going to end, because it's not going to end until it does end. And we don't know when that will be. I can keep talking in circles, but I think you get it.
He's crucial to the Phillies offense. And, yeah, you know, I do think in the past he's been a guy who's had good months and bad months. So welcome to the Phillies. That's generally how the offense works, unfortunately. Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to choose, since they've managed to win a couple of games here anyway, I'm going to choose to just assume this is going to work its way out. We'll check back in a week and see how terrified we should be. But until then, not the best Kyle Schwarber numbers you've ever heard, I hope. And yeah, hopefully he can rectify. But also, Liz, suddenly people look injured everywhere. They're not. But boy, there was a point last night on Wednesday night when seemed like there was suddenly a big old injury problem. There's not. I can't stress that enough, because the butt kicking is one thing, but a burst of injuries is another. Last night we saw Andrew Painter leave the game after four innings with left hamstring tightness. Painter is optimistic he avoided anything serious, but the Phillies will reevaluate him when he comes in on Thursday, writes Paul Casella. Painter initially sustained his injury on a first inning pitch to Nats left fielder Dalen Lyle when his foot appeared to stick on the ground as he spun off the mound towards first base and fired a 96-mile-an-hour fastball past Lyle for strike three. Now, you certainly didn't need all that detail, but I did want to just kind of lay that out, that, like, yeah, this is something that he did very early in the game and then kept pitching, which, you know, you're going to hear both sides of that, where people like his toughness. And I feel like the Phillies probably like, oh, yeah, well, you can't. He's a gamer. He's going to blah, blah. Obviously, further injury concerns are valid for popping up in a situation like that. But ultimately, Liz, I'm blown away here by the perfect timing of this occurrence. Obviously, the number one thing is, man, I hope Painter is close to 100% healthy as he can get this season. We're kind of running out of time, but it'd be great to see him kind of build off this soft, successful reemergence into the major leagues that he's had, because, you know, guess what? That solid start in Baltimore was enough for Dombrowski to wave off any starting pitching ads at the trade deadline. Mm. So if something's wrong, oops, basically, is the only response you have. Are you concerned in that way? I don't think your confidence in Painter for being, you know, that guy was much higher than mine, but I was willing to buy in on the zeros he was putting up against Baltimore and trust that, like, okay, if all we need is a fifth starter, he's looking like maybe he could do that in the very small amount of evidence we have.
Yeah, I could get on board with that. It's like, you know, we all had to get on board with Taijuan Walker.
No, I was never. I was getting dragged behind the wagon on that one.
Oh, Taijuan. We don't have a choice but to get on board with Andrew Painter at this point. He's got to do what he's going to do what he's going to do. But I at least am going to continue to hope he can perform at the level that they need him to, because he doesn't have to be perfect. He doesn't have to be amazing. He just has to keep the Phillies in every game and not let it get out of hand.
I disagree. I think he should be the league's first perfect number five pitcher, a concept that continues to make me laugh, that we were like talking about. What is a good number five pitcher? What does that mean? That's not a guy.
And every time we look at the guys who are available, we're like, none of them are good. I'm like, because we're looking for a fifth starter. They are typically amazing. That's the point. They're at the back of the rotation because you're never going to start them in a game that matters.
It's like asking why the backup catcher isn't better. It's because he'd be a starting catcher. Like, that's
exactly.
That's, you know, that's exactly how that works. Very unfortunate, especially given we all are more than familiar with Andrew Painter's injury history, and to see anything be wrong is a real shame. I hope he's able to, you know, come back and build off the success that he's starting to accrue. That would be very nice to see. And not just because it's crucial for the Phillies, because it'd be great to get a glimpse of that this season. It's been a lot of up and down, but mostly down with Andrew Painter. And that was a real bummer. Nobody was expecting that. And I don't think anybody from the Phillies, I think the Phillies definitely weren't expecting that. I think the Phillies were planning on the opposite happening. So it'd be great to just, even just a glimpse would be nice. But on top of that, Bryce Harper looked like he hurt himself sliding headfirst into second base in the 10th inning right before everything happened. But he did stay in the game. But boy, there was, if you were watching or even listening to the radio broadcast, I mean, they had entered that. There's like a moment of, that guy's like laying on the ground and there's a window of time and then he gets back up. And you're like, oh, okay, he's fine. And just in general, the injury cloud was only darkening as that situation went on. And obviously for that to happen to Bryce Harper sets off a different kind of alarm in your head. So a pretty harrowing moment, Liz, to say the least, right?
I was terrified. I kept watching the replay they showed. I'm like, why did they keep showing it? He's definitely going to be fine, right? 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 It was alarming because the repercussions of that would, I don't want to talk about it. Do you?
No, we don't have to. So we can move on to the other, hopefully not that bad situation that occurred in the Wednesday game affecting the very man we were celebrating just moments ago. Per Paul Casella, Derek Hill left that game in the top of the 11th after crashing full speed into the center field wall while trying to track down a deep fly ball. First, obviously it's not funny, but I liked that description because it included the framing of while trying to track down a deep fly ball, as though there'd be like another reason he'd crashed full force into the center field wall. Like, he's just running around out there and things got out of hand. Like, no, he was trying to make a play. He smashed into the wall and then he left the game. He had been on the ground for a little while. That was very sad to see. You don't want to see that happening to just because of everything Derek Hill's. But the moments Derek Hill has created for this team have been immeasurable at this point. But for now, they're saying Hill has a right shoulder contusion and Harper is okay. Both of them more injury scares than injuries. But, we'll see. We'll see what happens. I don't think that the Phillies aren't saying that. I'm saying that about, us. We will see.
Yes.
What happens, because that was an unpleasant series of minutes. Again, Liz, the timing. This new defensive alignment, kind of precarious, but it comes with, in theory, the payoff of a more effective offense. So what would the Phillies do if they suddenly lost two outfielders? Or is this exactly what you were just saying you didn't want to talk about?
I'm frightened.
Keep in mind, in this scenario, it's not just Bryce Harper. It's an additional outfielder as well.
Oh, so it's even worse.
And you're saying you don't want to talk about that either. Interesting.
Weird. I mean, yeah, we can all imagine that it would be terrible, bad, and that the substitutes would be terrible and would have a huge impact on the team as a whole and how they would be doing. Why wouldn't I want to talk about that?
We're kind of ride or dying with the with the depth issues on this team. Yep. Like, you're really you are on the razor's edge
at all times,
at every given moment. And in a night where three different guys are like, ow, you're like, oh no, oh no, that can't, no, listen to me, that can't happen.
No, cannot.
And that's the Phillies trainer talking, like, when he's like out on the mound, like, this can't happen. I'm telling you right now.
Simply no.
I was told if I diagnose anyone with an injury, I will be banned from baseball. So
please, my family, they're starving.
Rub some dirt on it, I guess.
I guess.
I know, but I mostly good.
Go ahead. I was just saying, before we get to the end, I wanted to mention one thing about how the Phillies have been doing lately. And I don't know if you've taken a look at Bryson Stott's numbers, but I looked at his, he came up on screen last night and I looked at the little stat line they put down and he was hitting like 257. Like that's like more than reasonable. He's been hitting almost 300 since June 1st.
I was wondering when his stats were going to bubble over enough for somebody to like write a blog about it, or see a Fangraphs thing saying like Bryson Stott corrected this thing and now he's doing better. Because yeah, his success has been kind of quietly happening, because it is quiet success.
It is. It's not like he's not jacking the ball. He's not, you know, being showy, but he's getting on base. His on base percentage over the time is 378, which anything above 350 is like a gift. It's glorious in my eyes. So it's nice to see him doing better, because I was very concerned at the beginning of this season and for the first several months that he was going to just make himself expendable. And I like him too much for that to happen.
Yeah, I'm glad you pointed that out, because yeah, it's gone. But that's, you need that kind of happening too. You need the big engines and you need the quiet engines. And I think, you know, everybody will eventually get their recognition. But yeah, pretty cool to see Bryson Stott coming through in a couple of cases. Like I said, one of the many Phillies who have doubled in this game tonight, that the Phillies are currently up 6-2 over the Washington Nationals as we finish up our recording here tonight in this episode of Hitting Season. Yeah, mostly good things, I want to say. I know we went kind of dark there at the end, but since, you know, the Orioles series and this Nationals series, if you're somebody who was hoping the Phillies would win rather than lose, they started doing that. And, you know, I think there will continue, as I said at the top of the show, there's going to continue to be problems with this team. There's going to be things that have you ripping your hair out or making you think they can't continue or this will have long-term effects. And maybe you're right, maybe you're not. The point is they also do have things that work, and some of those things work a little better now. So it's going to be a balancing act from here on out. They're not going to be an easy watch, certainly not in the postseason, but they are. It is fun to watch Luis Arraez hitting this lineup. It's fun to see guys like Stott come through a little more now. It's fun to see even, like, you know, just Brandon Marsh, who's been struggling, but he's had a couple of doubles now in the past couple of nights, and Kyle Schwarber will find his swing again too before the end of the season. So this is looking like a team that's going to make things interesting and keep things interesting, and I guess we should have expected nothing less. Well, that'll do it for this episode of Hittin' Season. My thanks to my co-host Liz Rocher. You can get new episodes of Hittin' Season 3 times a week anywhere you get your podcasts. You can also find bonus Phillies podcasts at the Hittin' Season Patreon at patreon.com/hittinseason. I'm Justin Clue, and from WHYY, that's the ballgame. We'll talk to you next time on Hittin' Season.